This meeting of the Job Growth, Energy Affordability, Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today is Thursday, April 12th. First order of business is approval of the minutes dated April 11th. Representative Clark moves approval of the minutes from April 11th. Is there any corrections, changes, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, the first bill on our agenda today is House File 4095. The chair will move House File 4095. For possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Nash, thanks for sticking around. Our apologies for not getting to the agenda yesterday. Just be aware to Representative Nash and the testifiers, we have an ambitious agenda before 1 o'clock, so brevity will be appreciated. I speak on behalf of the entire committee. The chair has moved your bill. Do you have any amendments to your bill, Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, no.
Representative Nash, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. 4095 is the expansion of the youth skills training that you all heard last year. That was not my bill last year. I believe Representative Rarick, I appreciate the work that you did and also amending in some of the language that I had from one of my own bills. But, Mr. Chair, it is a very good program. It is being applauded all around the state. It's helping kids get exposure to the trades in high school so that when they decide to perhaps not go to college and want to enter a good job in the trades, that they have an on-ramp to do so. Again, it's very simple and a pretty straightforward bill. The changes are on 1.8 through 1.10 and on 3.1. So it just essentially expands the pot of money and has the amount go to $100,000 per year. I do have one testifier and perhaps a few others, and they will all be brief.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Amy Wallstein, and I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Precision Manufacturing Association. We're here today to ask for an expansion of the Youth Skills Training Program. This is a program that you all put in place last session, and it has been wildly successful. There have been 28 school districts that have formed local partnerships over the past few months in order to put together a program that will allow 16 and 17-year-olds access to apprenticeships and internships in skilled industries. The reason that we're coming back now is that the grant cycle for the program needs to be aligned with the school year. We have 5 grants available for the 2018-2019 school year, and we're asking now to have that expanded to the 2019-2020 school year so that we can offer more than 5 pilot or 5 grants per school year. So we're asking you to consider this funding increase at this point so that we can continue to work with schools to build Minnesota's skilled workforce. Thank you.
Thank you. Assistant Commissioner McGannon, are you here? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony. And are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing that, Assistant Commissioner McGannon, you'll be the last testifier on this bill. Please introduce yourself here for the tape.
Yes, I'm Heather McGannon. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. And thank you for the opportunity to update you on the demand for the Youth Skills Training Program and Youth Skills Training Pilot Grant processes. I'm going to provide some stakeholder feedback that we've received from local partnerships, including school districts and employers, and outline the intended use of additional Youth Skills Training funding. The Youth Skills Training Program began this fiscal year, and during the past 9 months, DLI has created the program, mentored potential local partnerships, developed a process and application for the YST's 5 grant pilots, and began to track the YST metrics. And we've had huge demand for our program. Rich Wessels is the YST program manager for fiscal year 18 and fiscal year 19. He's currently working with 59 potential YST local partnerships throughout the state. These local partnerships are at various stages of development, expansion of current program, implementing of new program, and initial community conversations. There will be 5 YST pilot projects that will be funded up to $100,000 each, and they will begin this July 2018. These projects will also be at various stages in development from startup to expansion. Letters of intent to apply for the YST pilot grant funding were due Thursday, April 5th. And the goal of this process was to ensure that local partnerships were established prior to working hard to submit a grant application. We currently have 28 local partnerships that were approved to apply for YST pilot grant funding, and these local partnerships represent over 60 school districts, over 100 employers, 13 post-secondary institutions, 19 other partnerships, which include chambers, workforce groups, and nonprofits. And Rich has done a fantastic job in working to get feedback from stakeholders. So stakeholder input is very important with all DLI programs. And we've been gathering this since we began in July to determine the most effective methods for developing and supporting programs throughout the state. And so the three main feedback we received is provide opportunities for local partnerships at every stage of development, from initial interest to YST development, and then to offer grants in the fall prior to the grants being implemented, allowing for them to put them into their courses and allow for budgeting, and that they're really excited about this program. So additional funding would provide more flexibility to meet the demand of local partners and assist them in beginning or expanding career experience and programs for learners. And we will use these funds to open a second round of YST grants in the fall of 2018. And they'll be implemented in July of 2018.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to thank Representative Nash for bringing this bill forward on the work of Representative Rarick that you have recently done. This is an area that I care a lot about, is creating these opportunities for youth to get some, whether it's, working with the trades or some skills or mentors or, apprenticeship trainings, whatever that may be, but to create that pathway, I think is an absolutely good thing to be doing at this time. Just want to thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clark?
Mr. Mayor, I also want to thank you for this bill. I have one question. Does this include, or could it include farming youth who are interested in learning those skills?
Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I don't see why it couldn't. I know that you're big into urban farming, and we've worked on projects that that you've participated in as well, so I don't see why it couldn't. It's very wide open.
Thank you.
So, yes.
Representative Nash, you get the Representative O'Neill.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, just really quick. Is this general fund money, workforce development money, and how many students have we served so far, and how many will we expand to?
Assistant Commissioner McCann.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill. So this pilot project just has begun this year, and as I said, we are looking, that will be the information we provide in our report that will be February 2019 on the youth skills training. It is in workforce development funds. So currently, there's $700,000 that was allotted for fiscal year 18 and fiscal year 19.
Representative Nash, you get the last word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. There are students in every one of your districts that are in high school right now. They don't have a plan for college, but they would love to work with their hands or work in cybersecurity or in any number of things. That is exactly why we're doing this program. And, again, I wanted to thank Representative Rarick for the work that we did last year. Since that happened, I've heard from thousands of people across the state, so this is a very good program, and I appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you. With that, the chair renews his motion to have House File 4095 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner McCannon. Steve Hill, if you want to come down, next bill is House File 4180. The chair will move House File 4180 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And members of the committee, this is the chair's bill. What it is it modifies the existing state broadband program to allow for satellite broadband providers to be eligible for grants. As everyone knows, the stated purpose of the broadband program is to get high-speed internet to those areas that are both underserved and unserved in our state. Right now, the technology, the parameters that you see listed under page 1 would be expanded into page 2 to allow for satellite broadband equipment and to include satellite broadband providers. This is consistent, in my opinion, this is consistent with our views of being technology agnostic and focusing more on the services that we are providing end users. Well, that's the end of my presentation. I have one testifier. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Steve Hill. I am the president of the Satellite Broadcast Communications Association. Chairman Garofalo, members of the committee, it's my pleasure to be here to express support of 4180. The satellite industry recognizes the importance and opportunity to deliver high-speed internet everywhere. Within the past 12 months, two providers, Viasat and Hughes, have launched new satellites that are able to deliver broadband service with minimum speeds of 25.3 and plans to offer higher speeds in the future. This service is currently available to all residents of Minnesota, and both companies have plans to be able to continue to expand their service. As you consider how to best achieve your goal of universal access, we encourage you to include all technologies in broadband strategy. It will take a multimodal approach to feasibly reach every consumer. It's also important to understand that the infrastructure used to deliver the service will vary based on the technology, and incorporate this into any of your grant and funding process. In this way, the state will be able to meet its objectives in the most timely economical fashion. States like New York, Ohio, and Tennessee have already recognized the potential of satellite broadband will play in the role of expanding high-speed service throughout the community and allow their broadband dollars to be used to support satellite services. HF 4180 will allow satellite to be another tool in Minnesota's broadband toolbox. Satellite companies continue to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in the next generation of high-speed broadband. These next generations of satellites will be deployed within the next few years, and they will be providing speeds of 100 megabit service and more across North America. Satellite technology will continue to evolve, and the consumer experience will continue to improve, much like other telecommunications products have done over the last decade. While satellite is not a silver bullet that will solve all of Minnesota's internet access challenges, it's a viable option for Minnesota consumers and should be part of the strategy. I hope you'll support HF 4180, and I'm happy to answer anybody's questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. If you could stay where we're at, we're just going to see if there's any additional testifiers. Is there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion. Mr. Hill, you're available for questions, I assume?
Of course. Okay.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hill. One of the concerns I've had, and this kind of applies to all different providers, is throttling back services after X amount of data usage. And I do think that, you know, if you're receiving public funds, we should actually be not capping any users that aren't, you know, a business where maybe they're using an exceptional amount. What are your intentions or plans?
Well, so that's a great
Mr.
question.
Mr. Hill, just to be clear, just go up to the chair. Sorry. Mr. Hill.
Okay, sorry. That's a great question. So the throttling has, you know, always been a concern. There are plans currently available that have unlimited data. And they're also for people that are heavy use. There are also times of, you know, that you can download, and a lot of it becomes people trying to download their movies and their streaming services. So we're encouraging people to download things during off-peak hours, so they can, you know, pre-record it, download it. That doesn't affect any of the bandwidth. So, you know, we would encourage that. You know, the one challenge you have with any of technologies are that there are a few users that will be exceptional, you know, users of that, which can impact everybody. And so, you know, whether it's a satellite play or cellular play or others, they can be impacted. But I think that, you know, that's something that we could work with you on and say, look, but we do at this point offer some unlimited plans that can really offer, especially the business consumer, a tremendous use of their bandwidth so they can meet that need.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you just outline, and it doesn't have to be an exact number, but the cost of an unlimited plan and then, like, a cost of a 25 down and three up plan.
So 25 down and three up would be is going to be your speeds. Okay, so that's our speed, and that's our minimum speed. And then it becomes how much bandwidth you want. So a 25.3, whether I have 30 meg plan or an unlimited plan, you're always going to get that same exact speed. An unlimited plan, let's say a consumer wants an unlimited plan, you're probably looking about $149 a month. If somebody wants a lesser plan, you're probably looking at the $79, and that's potentially the $60 to $79 most common consumer plans. You know, we recommend, too, that consumers look at what they're using. If they're constantly seeing their, you know, they've got five kids and they're downloading everything, they might not need to look at, you know, a more expensive option that's going to meet that particular need.
Representative Metza. Nope. So, again, just a little member education for people. When it comes to prefixes, remember there's a megabit.
Yep.
Then there's gigabit.
Yep.
And there's crap ton. And then there's, like, you know, above that. So I think that's a technical term.
It's also the amount you use versus the speed. So, you know, we're using we're always guaranteeing a minimum speed. So we don't tend to promote up to, we are minimum of. There, you know, and so when people look at 100 meg speed, they're just going to get a lot faster service when those become available.
Yeah, people should think of it as the connection is the size of the water pipe.
Yeah.
Versus the data amount that's allowed over a month is the amount of total usage that's brought in. So I'm going to blow up here.
Yeah. Under your chair.
All right. Representative Howe. And, oh, staff, if you could take Representative Sundin's provisions out of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I got two quick questions. One is, what has been done to help the reliability during severe weather? Because I use satellite for my TV, and that always seems I lose it whenever we get a lot of rain, a lot of snow, or wind. And the other question I got is, how is these funds going to help expand the coverage? How are you going to use these funds to expand the coverage or make this more available?
Mr. Hill.
So on the reliability, as the technology improves, the dish quality improves, the installation, the materials, those continue will improve. Severe weather will be impacted. If you're constantly, your service or your satellite TV is constantly going out, I'd like you to contact me, because that should not be happening unless it's severe hurricane, those type of forces. If it's just generally snowing or raining, that's something that we might want to take a look at. But I know people that had, you know, their satellite service 15 years ago had a small dish, 18-inch. As it got bigger, those are going to be less likely. The Internet, because it's actually a two-way, it's actually that dish is going to heat up a little bit more, so it's actually less likely to get any snow on the particular thing. As it relates to funding, you know, we would look to target the most underserved or unserved areas. So we're not tracking a broadband approach, really more take the scalpel to the specific areas that have no other options for services and be able to target those funds. And that's something really is what's been done in New York. Say, look, these customers are not going to be able to be achieved and reached by any other source within the next few years. Satellite is going to be their best option. So let's look at putting satellite in and making that available to those particular consumers.
Representative Howe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'm still wondering, so you're going to target those folks, but what does this money do? Because the satellite's up.
That's correct.
How is this money going
to... We might be able to underwrite the cost of the equipment.
Hold on. Representative Howell, finish your question, and then I'll go to Mr. Hill.
That's the question, is how is the funds actually going to be used? Because the satellite is up there already, I assume, so we're not going to use the money to put the satellite up there. So how is the money going to be used to expand the service?
Mr. Hill.
So the thought was maybe, you know, help to underwrite the cost of the product to the consumer to start. So if that consumer in the equipment, let's say, was $300, maybe that consumer would still have to put some money because we don't want to give it away, but it would help underwrite the cost to make that initial purchase lower and then include that so that there would have to be a guaranteed price point would be fixed for a number of years so that, you know, that consumer know what they'd be paying on a monthly service for, let's say, 2-3 years, what have you, whatever that would be by the state.
Okay. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was related to that as well. And the bill actually says that up to 50% of the installation of the equipment to receive the satellite is what the grant would cover. And so my question was if what was the cost of the equipment? And you'd said $300. Is that sort of an industry standard of the equipment to actually receive the satellite signal?
Mr. Hill.
Yes, that's going to be roughly what those costs are going to be.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay, so it's about $150 per resident that this bill would cover. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Representative O'Neill, we don't have a specific dollar amount, but that may be something that the chair should consider, is to put a cap in there. So if someone claims they have a $75,000 installation for their satellite, the state's not on the hook for $37,500, but that would clearly be the author's intent, is to be some level. So that's something we'll have to take a look at.
And I would just like to also clarify that typically the installation is included, so the equipment, and then there will be sort of a freestanding installation with any of those services. You'd be really looking underwriting the cost of the actual upfront cost to that consumer to make it easier.
Other questions or comments from the committee? Mr. Hill, do you have any closing comments before I give my closing comments?
I just want to thank everybody for their time. I would appreciate anybody has questions, feel free to contact us, and the industry is going to continue to be here. We recognize this as a great opportunity for us to expand and grow the business.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. And again, obviously it's my bill, so I'm in favor of it. But the you take a look at across the state of Minnesota, there's certainly areas where fiber or fixed wire communication are really the best way to provide internet services. There's also places where wireless communications are the best way, whether that be cellular or fixed wireless. However, there are portions of our state because of either soil composition or, you know, it's rock in the ground, or because they have an extremely hilly, bumpy topology, and other reasons, that satellite is an option that should be pursued or at least be available. particularly in those areas that have exceptionally low densities. As everyone knows, I mean, the lower the density, the more likely you are to have a wire to have a non-fixed, you know, a non-fixed wire solution. And even in those areas where it's low density, very high trees, this is something that I think that the state should be considering in terms of providing these incentives. So, with that, the chair renews his motion to have House File 4180 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Hill. Thank you.
Thank
members.
You, everybody.
Right. Okay, so why don't we have Ms. Anderson Kelleher come up? Exercising her prerogative as former Speaker of the House, she gets to testify before everyone else. Little known provision in House rules. And so, Ms. Anderson Kelleher, what we have right now is we have the review of your report, but then also we have Representative Lehman's bill that provides additional funding for broadband as well as a substantial number of advocates. So do you feel comfortable if I have Representative Lehman sit up there with you?
Mr. Chairman, I would love to have Representative Lehman come sit right next to me.
So,
that would be great.
That way we can kind of integrate not only the governor's task force on broadband, but then also we can kind of we'll merge the advocates in there. So right now, the Representative Lehman will move House File 3527 for possible inclusion in a later bill, but we'll incorporate the governor's task force report into this presentation. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, Ms. Kelleher, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Margaret Anderson Kelleher. I chair the Governor's Broadband Task Force and have for almost the past 7 years by appointment of Governor Dayton. The task force is a group of advocates, industry representatives, representatives of particular sectors like healthcare, education, who come together once a month, every month, to discuss how we are going to connect all Minnesotans to broadband. And so I'm going to give you a brief report, Mr. Chair. I have cut my slides by 25% already, so hopefully that will be helpful. One of the things that the is called for is no later than 2022, and this was by legislative action, all Minnesota businesses, homes, as well as farm sites are connected to high-speed broadband, and we define that as 25 by 3, which you've already heard a little bit about. There's also a secondary goal here, and that goal is by 2026, all Minnesota businesses, homes, and farms have at least one provider that can provide a download speed of 100 megabits and an upload speed of 20 megabits. And this is important to frame up in terms of what we are doing with broadband in the state of Minnesota to make sure that all Minnesotans have that 25 by 3 and then that 100 by 20. The good news is, working together with all of you here in the legislature and Governor Dayton's signature, we have been able to increase broadband speeds from 2015 to 2017. Today, 88% of all Minnesota households have access to speeds at 25 by 3. In rural Minnesota, there has been improvement. However, the improvement is not quite as great. It's now 73.5% of all rural Minnesota households have access to wireline broadband speeds at 25 and 3. And so you can see there is a differential here between what's happening. Our latest numbers by the mapping that happens in the state of Minnesota tell us that there are 256,000 households that are unserved by broadband still. So although we have made great progress, we are not all the way across the line. And I want to remind everyone that legislatively you have decided collectively to invest in a program to connect all Minnesotans through the Border to Border Broadband Program. This is important. You've also established the broadband office, the Office of Broadband. So one of the things that we wanted to do in our report this year, and I know we had a brief discussion about this earlier in the committee, is to be able to answer the question, just how much would it take to connect all Minnesotans with state dollars? And so we have gone through an exercise that has really come up with these two important recommendations for you. That $71.48 million every biennium for about until the job is done, which is about the next 4 to 6 years, would connect with, partnered with federal dollars and with other investments that are being made. So this is not a go-it-alone sort of project here in the state of Minnesota. This is partnering public and private together to do this. We also see a need, Mr. Chairman and members, to make sure the Office of Broadband has some ongoing funding here. Right now, they live a little like the program does, which is year to year. And we really hope that there could be some base funding for their work. They have many important tasks. Since 2014, the program has received $85 million of state funds, and it has leveraged $110 million of state funds. That has connected over 34,000 households, over 5,000 businesses, as well as 300 community institutions. This is important. And so this math slide, which I know that we've provided to the committee and maybe digging in deeper on this, is the math of how we get to that $71 million figure that takes out, backs out other funding going forward. And I know that's what the Representative Lehman is carrying here, is the remaining for this biennium of $51 million that would be needed to meet this amount. The other important thing here is the Office of Broadband, and just saying that they have many statutory responsibilities. They've been important resources for all Minnesotans. Today is Broadband Day on the Hill. You will see all these great advocates. You can maybe raise your hand if you're here for Broadband Day on the Hill right now. And I think that tells you that they are the voice of broadband. This is, Mr. Chair, you know, this is a little bit of a nerdy issue. You and I appreciate nerdy issues. But these folks in the audience today, and you'll hear from them, represent the voice of broadband. I'm going to stop there. Thank you.
Representative Lehman.
And Mr. Chair, my apologies. I have to go chair another public meeting right now, which...
What public meeting is that?
Mr. Chair, that is by appointment of Hennepin County. I chair the Ballpark Authority. It is really a no-fun job.
Well, always good to see you, Speaker Anderson Keller. So... Representative Lehman, you've already moved House File 3527 to your presentation.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. We don't usually meet on Thursdays, and so I especially asked to have this hearing today to take advantage of all these folks from across Minnesota who have traveled for hours to come here to advocate for something that's very important to them. And so we will hopefully have some time to hear their stories. Reliable broadband is a huge priority for my area. My background is economic development and business development, and back in the 1990s, I thought the most important thing I could do to help move our economy forward was to bring broadband to our community. And I started the Itasca Technology Exchange as a for-profit business incubator. And it was used as a model for northeastern Minnesota as we began looking at bringing broadband to the area. And I'm sad to say that here we are 20 years later, and we still do not have every citizen connected with the fiber that they need. Our schools, our businesses, our healthcare providers, our communities, we know will fall behind if we don't have those connections. We know that this program leverages other funds. Last year, the $20 million that this legislature provided leveraged an additional $34 million in private sector investments. Over the life of the program, $110.6 million has been leveraged. So I think, you know, as we look as folks who would like to see a free market be free to do their thing, there's certain times when the public sector really needs to come in and support areas where there's market failure. And I believe that broadband is one of those areas. If it made sense, if it was profitable for our providers to reach every rural area, they'd be doing it. Why not? Why wouldn't they be doing it? But they can't. And so this is a place where government can come in. And it's unlike roads and highways and other infrastructure that needs repair, maintenance, or replacement. This is a one-time investment for the state of Minnesota. This is not an infrastructure that the state of Minnesota will own. It is a role for government, I believe, in making it possible for the private sector to reach those customers that they couldn't reach otherwise. And what I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is I do have several folks that have come and are ready to testify, and if I can get as many of those to the microphone as I can, I'd like to do that. But first, I'd like to call Gary Johnson, CEO of Paul Bunyan, and Nancy Hoffman, who is the chair of the Coalition for Rural Broadband.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed to testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Garofalo and members of the committee. My name is Gary Johnson. I'm the CEO of Paul Bunyan Communications in Bemidji, Minnesota. And I want to thank you for your focus on this important issue today. As I said, as CEO of Paul Bunyan Communications, we are a member-owned cooperative, not-for-profit cooperative. We were formed in 1952, just to give you a little background on us. And, you know, for all the 66 years that we have been servicing our members and trying to expand, it's been with one critical goal in mind, which is supplying our members with critical communication services they need. Now, as you might guess, 66 years ago was all about getting a phone line to rural areas of our state. But the mission is exactly the same today, ironically, some six decades later. It's to get effective broadband and Internet access out to those same constituents and beyond. Our service territory runs from kind of the headwaters of the Mississippi up to the Canadian border, and all the way, we have fiber running all the way over to Lake Superior. So that gives you a sense of a pretty large service area that we serve. It's about 5,000 square miles, nearly all of which is now fiber and gigabit. And we've been offering broadband service across our entire territory since 2004. But now more than ever, broadband is a primary driver for economic development. I'm sure that's why we're talking about this in this committee today. And I can give you a really fresh example of that. It was just announced here a couple weeks ago that Delta Dental of Minnesota is opening up a new center, 150 new jobs in the Bemidji area. And they cited as their key decision-making factor broadband access in the fiber network that we have in that region. So that will be a huge game changer for the community in the region in north central Minnesota, much needed jobs for our community. And to have that on the back of the broadband availability, I think, is key and speaks to that. We also have many entrepreneurs in our community. There's a facility called the Launchpad, and we have up to 50 entrepreneurs that work out of that facility. And there, too, we have gigabit access, fiber access, and that is the sense you get from those entrepreneurs as well. That's why they're there. They need access for their startup businesses, for that new idea they have. And for us to have 50 that rent space in that facility to get access to that broadband, I think also speaks to the economic development and the job creation aspect that is so impactful from broadband. A little history about Paul Bunyan Communications in terms of our role with the grant program. We have been fortunate the last three funding years to be recipients of grant funds, and those dollars have totaled $4.5 million. But you should know that $4.5 million investment from this program of the state of Minnesota has turned into $11.2 million in terms of network expansion. That's what our projects have leveraged. And that's through creative partnerships and shared funding that we wouldn't have if it wasn't for this broadband grant program. That $11.2 million network expansion has served over 3,000 primarily very unserved and underserved locations across our service territory, most of which were going from absolutely nothing to this technology. And I could tell you 3,000 unique stories from those folks that we have managed to service in part because of this grant program. But I'll single out one, I think you'll see why I did. In Balsam Township, in central Itasca County, is home to just a couple businesses, very small, and a rural medical clinic. That clinic has struggled for years to have any kind of service, and if you can imagine this, it's a medical institution that was sharing a cell phone's Wi-Fi package to try to run a clinic. And even that was sketchy because of the cell phone services, also a little intermittent there. So that, they're trying to run a medical facility off this to serve those residents in that rural area. What we have now, thanks to this grant program, they are now fully connected with very effective internet access. And what that means for the future of the clinic is notable. In fact, the CEO himself said, without the internet access coming to his clinic, at some point they were going to shut the clinic down. It was just not a model they could continue to sustain running off of a shared cell phone. So we're happy to hear about things like that. Obviously, that affects the medical conditions for those people in that region. But it's also jobs, the people that work at that clinic. And it's also, we hear all over from people like that work from home, employees of entities such as Delta Airlines that have a lot of remote workers in this region that we have now built to. The mines, obviously. And then we have numerous self-employed people. We've been hearing from all of them with great stories of how they're now able to effectively work from home with upload and download speeds that really can sustain a home-based business. We also hear from grateful resorts who were losing customers because they did not have internet access to offer. And if we all travel, you can imagine that that probably has some truth to it. And so they've been able to turn that around with now service to those rural resorts. If you could have seen the Balsam Town Hall in October of 2016, this is a small little building, smaller than this room for sure. It was packed, and it was hot, and it was wall-to-wall people that were just ecstatic about this project coming to their area. So to say it has impact is understating what it means for these rural areas that have absolutely nothing to now have this technology. But if you look at the financial side of it, you know, I would like to think we're a progressive cooperative, meaning we are built to try to serve. And that's been our mission since farmers started us 66 years ago. But even with that lens of tolerance for poor business models, because your focus is on service, even from that lens, we are not able to build everywhere. We are not able to serve everyone that needs this critical service. We will not be able to do it if it's not with creative partnerships that leverage this grant program. Plain and simple. And there are so many areas remaining that will be challenging. And, you know, they're the furthest from current service. And so they'll be the toughest to get to. But this grant program and unique partnerships can do it. And really, you know, you think about those people, they're the ones that need the service the most. I would argue the most rural people need this more because they're further from medical institutions. They're further from educational institutions. They will be the first ones that do telemedicine and telehealth and really leverage the power of broadband because of their proximity or lack thereof of these types of places. So it's most important we get to them. And finally, in closing, I want to thank very much Deed and the Office of Broadband. They have been very effective, Dan and her team, very effective and efficient in terms of administering this program. And I'd like to point out that this grant program, as important as it is not the only thing they do very effectively. They are also out there doing leadership and support and mapping, planning, convening, educating across the state and beyond, really, to try to push toward this goal of access across our state of Minnesota. And it's for that reason, no wonder that 10 other states are looking at our grant program as a model that they see working very effectively. So I'm grateful for the leadership that has teed up this bill for us and your committee for its consideration. Our company is prepared to continue this expansion and build to our neighbors that are unserved today for all these critically important reasons I've said. And we can only do that, though, with the help of this grant program. And I'm happy to answer questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think we're going to try to get through all the testifiers that Representative Lehman has. And Representative Lehman, StateGov Finance is in here at 1 o'clock today. So it was like we're literally done right before 1. So. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed to the testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Hoffman. I'm the Chisago County Director of the HRA EDA. And also today I'm here representing the Minnesota Rural Broadband Coalition. I'd first of all like to draw your attention to a brochure that is in your packet. And on the back side, we have all of our members listed. There's over 70 members. These are people ranging from cities, counties, economic development groups, utility companies, healthcare, education. The list goes on and on. We're all coming together with one voice to talk about the need for broadband. We'd also like to thank Representative Lehman, and the members for supporting the bill and funding of broadband grants. The funding for border-to-border broadband grants is important to our coalition because there are proven economic benefits to reliable, high-speed broadband across all sectors of the economy. To ensure rural areas, their businesses, and citizens do not get left behind, it is critical for them to be able to access high-speed internet. The Minnesota Rural Broadband Coalition and its supporters request the 2018 legislature to fund the Border-to-Border Broadband Development Grant Program with the $51.48 million, as we heard from Representative Lehman and Kelleher. This achieves the 2026 broadband speed goals of 100 meg down and 20 megs up. Representative Lehman laid out that that last year was a very very quick turnaround time for these broadband grants. And as a community who fortunately was successful in receiving one of those grants, we saw that fortunately we had a township that was had the desire for fiber to the home, and we had a provider in CenturyLink that moved quickly to help us put together a proposal and get it in time and to be successful with it. But yet there were 70 other applicants looking for $50 million, and not all of those received the funding. You can also see on the fact sheet, and you've probably seen this map before, there's a lot of red on it, and that is the unserved and underserved areas. This border-to-border broadband grant has been very helpful, but there's still a long way to go. We understand that you'll be facing many challenges in making funding decisions this year, but on behalf of the coalition, we ask that you make funding broadband a priority. We are ready to put projects on the ground. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present today and this afternoon, and thank you for getting us on today while we're here at the Hill and squeezing us in. We really appreciate it. If you have any questions, I'm happy to.
Well, you can thank Representative Lehman because she wouldn't leave me alone. So, Representative Lehman, your next testifier.
I would really like to have Hannah Erickson. She's a young student. I have an opportunity who's driven down. Hannah, here.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Just state your name.
Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Hannah Erickson, and I'm a student at Greenway High School, which is about 3.5 hours north of here in Coleraine, Minnesota. I am here to advocate for the investment in Minnesota's broadband infrastructure and to speak on the importance of a high-speed, stable connection to a high school student. I'm speaking on behalf of my peers in rural Minnesota who too often fall behind in school due to the inaccessibility of a high-speed internet connection where they live. There are over 40 classes available at my high school that are only available online. Of course, of my peers without access to a connection at home, many have expressed feeling left out and discouraged from taking those classes that interest them. On top of difficulty with taking online classes, several of my classes exclusively use digital textbooks for assignments to be completed outside of the classroom, which this leaves those students without the resources necessary to complete their regular classwork. An internet connection, whether it's a good thing or not, has become as necessary to my education as a pen and paper. I have personal experience with falling behind in personal projects and classwork due to not having access to a stable connection. With having to attend telepresence meetings biweekly, along with keeping up with classwork, lacking a connection at home put me at a real disadvantage. Not having access to the resources that I needed to complete my schoolwork can only be described as frustrating and upsetting. Many services I needed to use were too bandwidth intensive for my wireless connection that I had to use at home. This made getting work done impossible. This problem was very quickly solved when my household switched over to broadband. Every student should have an equal opportunity to pursue their education to the fullest, and all students should be equipped with the tools necessary to do so. Additional funding for broadband infrastructure would aid in leveling the playing field and help close the educational gap between those of us who have access to broadband and those who don't. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Erickson. Quick question for you. You said when you do when you work with telepresence, is that for the actual classroom instruction itself?
That's for a personal project outside of school. I work with the Minnesota Youth Council as a member, and I have to attend meetings online because coming down to the cities every weekend would be quite expensive.
So in your opinion, how did the tele, for you when you had access to the telepresence, and maybe some people in the room aren't familiar with it, but how did it, did you enjoy working with it? Did it seem like it, it, did it give you the benefit, all the benefits you'd have if you got in your car and drove to where the meeting was at?
It's definitely a very effective way to meet with people. I mean, you get to see them face-to-face through a webcam, and, you know, the communication's there that you wouldn't be able to get through an email or texting. It's not as great as in person, but it's definitely the next best thing.
Pretty close, yeah. Okay, well, thanks for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed to the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Eric Clint from Campbell, Minnesota. I run a couple businesses, and I also a county commissioner for Wilkin County. For a second time, this is what you would have seen if you were at me at home on your screen. You would have heard testimony, but you wouldn't be able to see my face from video based upon my internet speeds. I've had internet speeds. I went to wireless towered service for 10 years. It was slow, but it was a little bit better than dial-up, but not very good. Just recently, I switched over to satellite, and the speeds I thought were going to be great, which they were at first, then it got dropped down to slower than dial-up. I paid just as much as what I paid before, and I'm getting basically 8 days of service, and I wait another 20 days for it to reboot. And that's what I'm dealing with right now. So one of my businesses, we track our airplanes across the three states, and it's live. We can monitor, see where everyone's at. When the service goes down, it's unreliable. So I don't know what to do. It's frustrating, and I just wanted you guys to understand where we're coming at. And from the county commission standpoint, I'm not alone. My first call that I got when I was elected was a constituent that was upset about broadband. And when you look at that map, it's exactly my area. The north half of our county is good. My half ain't good, so that's why I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lehman, we got 2 minutes left, and that includes your closing statement before we're going to adjourn. So I'll let you run the last 2 minutes here. What do you want to do?
Okay. There's one other testifier from Essentia Health.
I'm stepping in for her. Okay.
Would you like to just speak for a minute, Mr. Chair? Could I just have her speak?
It's your 2 minutes. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed to the testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Barb Andreessen. I'm stepping in for a representative from Essentia Health. I am director of telehealth for Alina Health. And what I wanted to talk to you about today is three services. It may seem unconventional that a health system that's headquartered here in Minneapolis would be here to testify, but we do serve communities as far south as Blue Earth, as far north as Aurora in Virginia and soon to be Ely, and as far west as Morris and Granite Falls. As we largely provide those services in telestroke and mental health areas, and are looking to expand the services in the patient's homes. And when you're talking about providing broadband services border to border, the ability to have strong bandwidth to the patient's home is vital when you're talking about chronic care disease services such as remote home monitoring, as well as the mental health services. So our ability to be able to expand those services to all patients in the state of Minnesota is predicated on the ability to have strong bandwidth.
Thank you. Representative Lehman, any closing comments?
Thank you so much for scheduling this, Mr. Chair, and giving the opportunity to hear from a number of folks from a number of different fields across Minnesota. I appreciate your time, and I ask for your support for broadband. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lehman renews her motion of House File 3527 as amended, laid over for possible inclusion. Members, reminder, the committee is meeting tomorrow, so make sure to keep an eye on the location and the time for where that meeting's at. Representative O'Neill, I need to meet with you one-on-one, so don't go anywhere. Representative Anderson, do you have a closing for the committee? Or?
Well, just a quick question. Any idea the length tomorrow? That could be a storm coming. Could we? What time are we going to meet?
So tomorrow's meeting is at 10 a.m., so, I mean, I don't expect that we're going to be taking votes on anything, so if you have scheduling conflicts, other committee meetings or whatever, just, I mean, I wouldn't worry about it. So, Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to compliment you on your new gavel.
Yeah, thank you. With that, members, we are adjourned.
Bless.